You finally finished that perfect logic, and you've wrapped it up into a class. You're ready to share it. You're ready to put it on NuGet, but you're wondering, what are the steps to actually get it there and do it right? That's what we're talking about on this episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Jeff Fritz, the one and only. He's the senior program manager on the NuGet team. Jeff, you've been on the show before. It's great to have you back. Thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jerry. I couldn't resist. We had so much fun last time. I had to come back.
Yeah. People will think that we recorded these back-to-back, but we actually didn't. It just happens to be a beautiful sunny day both times. And well, happen to be wearing the same jailbird shirt both times.
I went and changed shirts in between recordings.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Don't think I haven't done that, Jeff. all right, so today we've talked about NuGet as a whole and kind of going through the UI and all the philosophy sort of behind it, but we wanted to take it practically, maybe do a lot of screen sharing here, where we can show developers what the process is to take their class library and move it up into NuGet so it can be reused either publicly in NuGet or privately inside their enterprise, so whichever is right for them.
Yeah,
sound good?
Absolutely. Let's talk about that authoring story. How do I create a package, and how do I rely on other people's packages and make that all work together?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, how should we do this? I think you should share your screen, and maybe we'll just spin up a quick class library and see what we can do with it.
Sure, I'll drive for a little bit. Let's build something simple and really not focus on the code, but let's focus more on the packaging.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff, so I'm actually sharing my screen here. I have your site up. I have NuGet.org where all your packages are, including Template 10, one of my packages, and I just wanted to find it, and so it's a simple enough search. Your guys' search, by the way, is lightning fast and perfect every time. not every Microsoft product. Web property can brag like that. That one definitely can.
We've got some more fixes coming to it. Search is it's an inaccurate
Nothing's
science.
Perfect. Nothing's perfect. That's right. Let's just say you've got the gold star in the classroom,
okay.
Not in the world.
Oh, thank you.
One of the cool things, we had talked about this last time, how it keeps all the previous versions because you know a developer in some time frame might actually create a requirement on that in the dependency on that specific version, bugs and all. And so work around the bugs. And they really can't afford to change their app to handle all the fixes that may have come along. So I think it's a neat thing and probably surprising to a lot of developers when they look at how many older versions are there. Like it would be shocking to me if anybody used a library that old, but here it is, you know?
Oh yeah. And there are some packages hosted on the NuGet.org repository where there are thousands of versions out there. And
wow. Because they're using some sort of continuous integration that automatically does it?
Some folks are doing that. Some of them, they're actually going through and they're open source projects and they're iterating that quickly. They're building new features, new versions. And wow. Publishing that new version as soon as they're done integrating new feature X. Very
wow.
Cool stuff.
That's pretty neat. Code churn is both awesome and dangerous. So there you go.
It is scary to some people, yeah.
All right, so inside Visual Studio, I can, in the command line, just say install package and then pass the name of whatever that package is. I can use the UI, but then right here, I can download the raw package or the raw NuGet package, which is what's the extension? The file extension?
It's NUPKG.
NUPKG, or otherwise pronounced.
Yeah, if you're working with these things all day, every day, you start shortening that as much as possible, and we call them NUPKGs.
NUPKGs, of course you do.
Yeah. Of course we do.
Wonderful.
Not
and so I can download a
kegs.
NUPKG. I'm going to play along. It's NUPKG for me right now.
There
so I can download a NUPKG, and I can open it up in a tool that I can download from your guys' website called the NuGet Package Explorer, a Windows application that allows me to do all kinds of stuff, including edit as well. It's pretty neat.
So actually, NuGet Package Explorer isn't something that our team runs and maintains. However, we refer people over to it because a former team member wrote it and maintains it. And it's now sitting out there. They're working on the source code on GitHub, but there's a download available from CodePlex where it used to live. So you can download and have that running on your Windows machine.
All right, but the freshest source of it is on GitHub, though.
Yep. It's going to eventually all end up over on GitHub.
And so I'm glad you told me that, because I know that if I open up certain things, I see this. Actually, I don't see it. It used to say Windows 10 not supported. That was that update. The update must have...
It's just updated, yeah.
Yeah, how cool is that?
Right,
but
so it's...
one of the beauties of it, it allows you to see the structure, and it really is kind of a file structure, because a NupKeg is just a zip file.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes it real easy to use, and it makes it cross-platform capable.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so this allows me to sort of spelunk into it and see all the different pieces that are there that are not every class, not every NupKeg is the same.
It's weird to say.
But anyway, they're not all the same, not all requiring the same files. Mm-hmm. But this is the one that my library does. But other libraries, you know, they're very simple. You know, you just get one or two dependency in there and you're done. But it's a neat thing to visualize, because when it does start to become complex, it starts to become mentally... there's a lot of work to keep a clear mind.
Oh, absolutely. When you get into these heavier packages, the what we call fat packages that have a bunch of different DLLs, different libraries in there for different versions of the .NET framework, or for different runtimes, or different devices, right? You start to see more and more content in there, and it becomes trickier to manage and maintain exactly which versions end up in which places.
Let's talk about the difference. When you said you made a differentiation between runtimes and .NET, and so let's talk about why everything can fit in one package and what types of things you'd see.
So
a super fat one. Let's just be
sure
as politically incorrect as possible and just call it the fattest package that you've
the
ever seen.
The fattest package.
Your package is so fat.
Oh, yeah. Here comes a series of Yo Mama type jokes, right?
Your blood type is marinara. That's one of my favorites.
So
it's around the compiler.
Your package so fat we shipped it as an ISO.
All right.
Okay. So what you can do, right, we have these things called target framework monikers, and you can see it here in the display on the left that your package is referring to a target framework moniker of UAP10. Your arrow cursor is actually a little bit below that moniker there on the right side. And that's pointing out and indicating that this is a Windows 10 Universal App Platform set of libraries, references, and things to be used for Windows 10. Yeah. But you can also package and deliver things for .NET 4, .NET 3.5, for things that are written by our friends at Xamarin that are running in Mono, right? So you can target all these different target frameworks by just adding additional folders and additional directions inside of the manifest file, our new spec file inside of the package, to indicate how to use those files appropriately. So it's...
This left pane on the Explorer is really the manifest file being just rendered in a easy to look at sort of way.
Yeah, because the manifest file is XML, and XML is it's pretty human readable, but all those angle brackets and
sure.
attributes kind of get a little bit tricky to read sometimes, especially when it gets pretty big. So having it nicely formatted over here makes it a whole lot easier to work with for us humans.
Yeah, and well, I mean, here's the raw, so you can see it's easy to maybe make a mistake, but it's nifty. There's a little edit here too. It gives you a nice form experience, so you can try and get things as right as possible. Maybe that's the best way to say it.
Yeah,
as right as possible. Now, there's a lot of things. So actually, let's step through this just for a second. So I'm about to create my package. So I could have said file new and not open an existing one. All of these form fields would be blank. And mm-hmm. I could see a handful of them are bold. Those are the ones that are required. The others are optional. But some of them are still important, even though they're optional. And maybe we could just kind of race through those. And you tell me, just give me the thumbnail sketch of them.
Sure. So ID, of course, right off the top, that's your unique identifier for the package, right? And in the web page on the right side, you see you can install the package by calling install-package-template-10. That template 10 is your unique identifier that you're going to install this with.
It also
happens to be the element in the URL up at the top. We reference that ID when we build your URL. So
cool.
That's unique. And we actually try to recommend people make that something that's globally unique, right? If it's something that you can put your organization's name in so you can kind of namespace it, That works out really good. You'll see Microsoft has a best practice where all of our Microsoft official packages start off Microsoft dot something, mm-hmm. right? Microsoft.ASP.NET.MVC, right?
Yeah.
So those are kind of the system packages that we want people to reference.
Okay.
Version, of course, is the version number of the package. Now, it's a little bit different from the version number of the library that gets included inside, or libraries that get included inside of your package, because this is the version for the whole thing, the whole package, not just those libraries. So you can version those things separately from each other. And I want to point out that when you give a version number, we like to recommend that people use semantic versioning. Mm-hmm. So there's strong reasons why that major, minor, and patch version number are changed. You only want to change the major version number if there's a breaking API change, minor version number if there's a additional API capability, and the patch version number if there's additional functionality or a security fix and
or
no
bug
API
fix
change
even.
Happens. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So this third one can change all at once, and you know it won't break anybody who's using it. It's when you change the second, the minor, if there's a potential breaking change.
Well, it should be an additive change that you've made, right? You've added a new method. You've added a new class into the group, and it shouldn't break existing people that are using it because you're adding things. But when you do make a change, that's when we want to change that major version number.
And then, all right, that makes sense. And we talked about this last time, but as a reminder for those who may have missed it, you can add things like dash pre, and it becomes in a special category. Just because you have a dash anything, you don't have to push pre. I could put dash Fritz here, and mm-hmm. it means whatever it needs to mean for my package.
Right. That's your pre-release indicator. This isn't something that we think you should run in production yet, but it's pre-release. Give it a try. And NuGet will actually make those available and display those versions in incrementing alphabetical order.
Got it. Incrementing alphabetical order. Okay,
right.
Sure.
So
if this is
dash Fritz, that version is earlier than dash Jerry.
That because it's alphabetical.
Because it's alphabetical.
Okay. All right. That makes sense to me.
So, yeah. But version is something really important because when we get into dependencies, people get very concerned that they don't have breaking changes. They get into these reference nightmares if versions change number inappropriately and people aren't expecting those changes to come into their projects.
As a general rule, once you come up with whatever your ID is that's unique, you wouldn't change that because you would no longer get automatic updates anymore because
Correct.
You're a brand new package as far as NuGet is concerned.
Yep. There is no mechanism to change ID. We don't recommend you attempt to do it. When you do issue a package with a new ID, it's a brand new package and a brand new stream of versions that are available.
The title's obviously just the title. Is there a way to localize the title?
No, there isn't a way to localize it, but there is an indicator that you can put in there to indicate what language it's in.
Oh.
I believe that's actually on the public website. You can specify what language that's in.
Gotcha. Yeah, in fact, I see it right here in the spec.
Yeah, there it is.
You could put ENUS or probably a comma and move on from there too, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I know we have a number of people that submit there's packages that are in Chinese and Japanese that are hanging out there as well.
Okay, so authors is just free text. So this is just my ability to kind of give credit to whoever is involved or maybe to describe the company that is responsible for it. Where authors, and I'm kind of saying this for you, you correct me if I'm going down the wrong path here. Authors really represent users on NuGet.org. I can actually track that back to an actual user that is the owner of this package.
The owner's tag you're referring to, right? Authors are kind of the people who wrote the package.
Right.
Owners are the people who are managing the package on that repository.
I gotcha. Gotcha. So my name might show up as an author, but you're the guy who does all of the actual management of it and is responsible for it, maybe signs it before it goes out.
Yeah.
And so you are the owner.
It signs the DLLs inside there, yes.
Yeah. The DLLs, right. The NUPKeg doesn't get signed.
No, not yet.
Minimum client version is something I don't know what that is.
So what happened, we've introduced a number of features over the past year in what we call NuGet 3.
Okay.
And NuGet 3 really is specific to Visual Studio 2015 and the newer versions of the command line client. There are features that you may be placing inside of your package that require those 3.0 capabilities and aren't backward compatible. You can't use them in the older version. And some of these things really go along the lines of the new .NET standard, right?
Yeah.
The new .NET target framework capabilities that we have, where we're going to resolve packages and dependencies a little bit differently, and we're going to start dialing in some things around how those operations happen, because the NuGet package is more than just a DLL that it's shipping around. So 3.0 is a little bit of a change in behavior.
So that way it doesn't look broken just because you're using the wrong UI. So I see here in the documentation, I found one that says starting with version 2, you could do this. Well, whatever, right? But this is an example of in the docs specifying this is specific to a certain version of the NuGet UI.
Yep.
Gotcha. All right, so that makes sense. And not just the UI, but the whole extension.
Right. Otherwise, older versions, they'll just ignore it and not do what you expect it to do. This is a way for the author of the package to say, I need this version in order to deliver the capabilities that are in my package.
Okay. All right, so definitely something that is a little more of an edge case is the development dependency checkbox, or the ability to say true-false to that. But a lot of developers will wonder what that is, and you probably are the guy who can explain it.
So development dependency, these are things where you're installing some sort of a library or some sort of a feature that really should only live with your development code and not get carried along and delivered to in release mode, right?
Yeah.
So a great example of this is a test runner, right? So if I bring down a unit test runner like XUnit or NUnit, and I'm going to use that alongside my project to make sure that it tests and validates things properly. When I deploy to production area, I don't want to carry that exe along with me. That shouldn't be delivered with my project.
Yeah.
And that's what this checkbox does. It makes sure that those things that are only in dev mode don't go along with the release version of your application.
Gotcha. So when I'm looking at my template here and I see it in the library, I can see that I have an icon right here. I know that it pulls from the icon URL inside the package definition. But what I don't know is why. Now, it's not in the package, is it? It's in a different location.
Right. So we allow you to define that as coming from some location out there on the web so that you don't have to package up and deliver assets to us, right?
Mm.
We're trying to be community focused. These are your assets. It's your logo. And if you want to change your logo at some point, you can replace it on your server without having to change the packages everywhere.
Right, without versioning your package for
exactly
for nothing, you don't have to, really.
Exactly.
Great. So the project URL, a nice feature there, right? Points back to wherever you might have it.
Right. So for a lot of open source projects, for even commercial organizations, you want to be able to tell people, here's where to go to get more information about this package. And
I would guess that more than a majority of the packages on NuGet.org are open source. And so these are pointing back to the GitHub source.
Yep.
And it's just a handy place to find issues and everything else, right? And so it's just a great way to kind of link. Here's, you can install it on NuGet.org, but you know, you might want to be able to reference back to where it's
absolutely
home.
Here's how to get back involved with my community for my package.
Yeah. All right. So points at the so whether or not you have to accept a license, and then where that license is if they want to go read it. I think that part's obvious. What I've always kind of been curious of is the difference between summary and description, and kind of how you use those in different places, because they feel like they'd be the same thing.
They do feel like the same thing. Summary is a much shorter block, particularly useful on the NuGet UI inside of Visual Studio, where we've got that band for each package.
On the right-hand side.
Well, on the left side, we want to show just a little snippet of information that says, here's what this is.
Let me pull up a NuGet UI.
The NuGet UI.
We don't have to theoretically talk about it. We can just talk actually about it. And so you mean in this list, this is the summary right here.
Yep, one sentence there. There's the summary. And then on the right side, you see how the description is there. And it could be a little bit longer. Yes.
Okay, I gotcha.
So why don't you search for your template 10 here, and you can see, we'll be able to see back and forth between what you have. See how it's just real quick, two lines there, and then it's a full list of items here on the right.
I do. That's really nice. That's really nice. Look at all this magic that you give us. Give us for free.
Free. It's in the box.
Yeah, it's really terrific. All right, so let's go back here. And we're done. Copyright's just text. Language is what we talked about before.
Yep.
I didn't realize it was a drop-down. And this is actually new, the ability to specify the frameworks. This wasn't here the last time I remember looking. Or maybe it wasn't. I just overlooked it.
It's been there for a while. Yeah, if there are specific framework capabilities that you require that you want to make sure are there, you can reference them here and specify which frameworks are required and supported for your package.
Cool. Wow, that is awesome.
So okay. That's BCL type things.
And I can edit my dependencies as well as whatever those external references are as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nice. All right, so this is quite a tool and gets developers a long way fast. When it's all said and done, though, I'll pull mine back up because it's really more along the lines of this file that matters to them. And right now we have this consumption UI where you will read this, but then you'll present it to us and install it all for us. This isn't for us to push up to NuGet.org. And so right now the developers will probably become quite familiar with the way it's laid out inside their NupCake file.
Yep.
Yeah. Now let's see if... Are you at a place? Can we switch screens? And I want you to walk me through just the easy process so that developers can kind of get a feel for it and kind of watch the master in action.
Sure, let's take a look.
Okay, so I'm seeing two things here. I see Visual Studio, but I also see a command prompt. Looks like you're going to do a little bit of GUI and a little bit of not GUI.
That's right, yep. So the NuGet tools to actually build and compile that package they're available on the command line. There's a NuGet exe out there that you can download from our distribution site, dist.nuget.org.
Okay, so important note there, this is not shipped with Visual Studio. You, as a developer, need to go get it.
Right, and this is only if you're going to be building your own packages. Do you really need to go get that?
Okay.
So what I've done is I've started a new class library package here, new class library project here, and I just want to write some simple code here and turn it into a package that we can reuse. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to rename this to Hello World.
Oh, that's clever.
That's very clever, isn't it? And then let's create a public static method on public method on here, right?
Sure.
And we'll call this Hello Jerry.
Great. That's great.
And we'll just return... Hello.
It's a void, so you'll have to change the return time.
Oh, you're right. I'll turn that back into a string.
Here we go. Right,
go. Hello.
What's it going to say? What's it going to say? Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Didn't see that coming, right? And I'll build that, and it builds, of course, no problem. And I've got a file now sitting on disk. So let me go into that folder. So this is Jeff's package, right? Okay. And I've got... SLN file. Let me change into this folder. Right, so there's my class file. I've got csproj. I've got a bin. Now, I want to create that new spec. I have NuGet in my path so that I can call this. Gee, go figure that I would have my NuGet exe in the path.
You've used this before, then.
I use this all the time. Now, what I'm going to focus on is the init command. That's the one I want to issue first here because I want to initialize a new version of my new spec file for this current project.
Gotcha. Okay? So no new spec exists, so the init will actually create your first one.
So I want to generate that spec file. I want to put it down on disk for this project. So I'm going to focus on NuGet spec right now.
Gotcha.
And it's going to generate, because I'm inside of a folder with a project, it's generating my Jeff's package new spec file on disk. So
got
we
it.
Can take a look at that.
So there was no file prior to this. This is creating the initial kind of just the basics.
Right, absolutely. So I'll open that in Notepad here. And you see, it gives me a bunch of placeholders here that I can work with and some things that look like and feel like they don't really belong, right? This is kind of minimum things that we think you should consider. So where we have these dollar indicators here, these are things that it will fill in if I tell it to pack my package based on my csproj file, based on my C# package, my C# project file.
When I call pack and I leave $version $, it will synchronize the version of the library with the version by putting it in here, my new spec?
It'll grab the version out of my assembly info, and it'll
grab assembly info.
And it'll grab the title here and feed that in as well.
Neat.
Right? So it'll grab that version and drop it in here so that these things line up. And then author, I don't have an author in here, an assembly author by default, but if there was an assembly author, it would drop that in here.
Nice. That's cool.
So I'm going to actually force these because sure. I like to have – I'm sorry, not there. I want this to be
– Hello, Jerry.
Well, that's the name of my
– Oh, that was the name of the class, but you're packaging it as something else. I see what you're doing.
Right? So, I'm naming it the same thing as my project, right? My project is Jeff's package, right? This is Hello World, and the method is Hello Jerry. Let's format that nicely. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to put title should typically be the same as your ID, just so we don't get things lost there. As an author, I use my Twitter handle, C#Fritz. I am the owner. So I will call it the same thing.
Okay.
I don't really have a license, project, or icon, so I'm going to get rid of those. I don't need that. I don't require a license acceptance. Description, we're going to call this sample package for Jerry.
Ah.
I don't really have any release notes, but I'll drop that. Copyright 2016, sure. And I don't need tags.
So it can be really, really lean. Look at that.
It can be very, very lean. And now I can come down here and I can actually package my, I can actually bundle this up as a package by calling the pack command
okay. And
point to this new spec file. So if I say NuGet pack Jeff's package dot new spec, and it'll go through and it says here, oop, I found two issues. There's an assembly outside the lib folder. It sees that bin debug Jeff's package DLL is not inside a lib folder. You had, when we saw the Explorer, you had things sitting in a lib folder. And that's where NuGet expects things to live. So it's giving me some warnings here saying this isn't where these things are supposed to be. But it did still create my NuGet package. Let's go and move those things around appropriately so that it is where we want it to be. Now I can do that by creating a lib folder here. So let's create lib, and underneath lib, we actually want to define a target framework moniker for the package, for the framework version of the package that I'm using. So I'm using, as we can see here from this, I'm using .NET 4.6, so I'm going to create a .NET 4.6 folder, and I'm going to copy into .NET 4.6 the contents of my bin debug. And what was it? Jeff package DLL, right?
Yeah.
There it is.
So okay, so this might look a little tricky, but this is just a batch file you use to set up your package, right? I mean,
I can wire that up as a, yeah, absolutely, as a batch file. So I'm going to run NuGet pack again, and it's going to drop out and say, assembly not in a framework folder. I didn't put it under a framework folder. It's still above 4.6. Let me move that over real quick.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I see what happened.
Into .NET 4.6. There it is. And it still sees these other things in bin and obj. We should be okay. It should get away from that.
Okay. That's nice little checking, by the way.
Yeah, it's nice that it follows up and tells you, oh, these things are not where they're supposed to be. So now if I run Explorer here, I'll show you a little trick of how we can investigate what's in here without having to bring that other tool along. So you can see my NuGet package is here, and for some reason it's marked with a notepad. Well, I'm going to rename it and put .zip on the end. Because as we've highlighted, these are just zip files. And look at that. It did bring in my bin and obj folders here. Those shouldn't be in there. Let me get rid of those. It also brought in my class. It brought in these other things that it saw in my folder. And that's not really what all I want in here. So let me get rid of some of these other things because they're not supposed to come along for the ride. And
you know what I do? I actually move everything to a separate folder structure and then run it against that folder structure.
So that's one way that you can absolutely do this. I've done this where I've gone and I'll create a NuGet folder and then I'll move my lib under NuGet.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I've got something living in there right now. It doesn't want to do. No, not more. Move lib to NuGet. And now if I run NuGet pack and I point it to, what's the command to tell it where to root that at? It is, was it NuGet help pack?
It is -output
base
directory.
Path. I want to do a base path is what I'm doing here. Output directory is where I want to drop things. So I'm going to say NuGet pack base path. I put things in NuGet, and then it's Jeff's package new spec. And now it's pointing at just what's in that NuGet folder, and it creates my new spec
and
file.
That way it doesn't see the lib, doesn't see the bin. Gotcha.
Exactly.
And so in my process, if I were doing this, the step right before I ran the command you just ran, I would update and refresh all the DLLs in the lib folder.
Absolutely. The other thing, the other way to approach this, so there it is with just the lib folder. There's my net 4.6.
How do I support net 4.5? Do I need to repeat my DLL for every single version, or is there a bigger way to do it?
So it, currently you would have to put it, it as of right now, you would have to put different versions of the DLL in the package. What we're getting to is something called .NET Standard, where you'll be able to say this supports these versions of the .NET framework. And we have a nice little mapping of that that'll come out in the documentation when that's ready. And it will automatically work with any of those versions of the framework.
Cool. Cool.
So that's real quick how to build the package, how to get things out there. There's ways to even avoid doing the moving around of files. You can specify a files tag inside of your new spec and actually call out explicitly which files you want to put inside the package.
That's right. You can specify which folders. It's in the files file tag, isn't it? And you can say exactly which source you point to, and it doesn't try and guess anymore.
You can explicitly specify the files to include. You can grab it here. It's on our NuGet docs site under the create area, and you can read about all how to do that for your packages.
And and don't get discouraged. It'll take you 2 tries before you get it right. It won't be the first
exactly.
try.
There's
another tag in there around dependencies, and I know we're running short on time, but just tell me the purpose of that so everybody else could know too, because that's such a valuable part of this.
Yeah, so what the dependencies are those are the other packages, the other features that you want to bring along that your package, your library depends on. So if I was outputting JSON from my project here.
Yeah, and you wanted NewtonSoft to be part of your package.
Right. Well, it's not part of your package, but I want to reference it and use those features. I can include it as a dependency inside of my new spec, and it'll automatically come along.
So it's not in the zip file or the actual zip file. It's brought down automatically so that you don't have to push it along with yours and just bloat yours up with everything you use.
Absolutely. And then when the managers of that package, the owners of that package, update it and add new features, it doesn't affect mine. And this is where the versioning comes in. If they incremented just the patch version number, it should be safe to use with my package going forward.
Perfect. And that documentation, as you step through it, it really does... It kind of turns a lot of lights on, right? Because there's a lot of value all of a sudden. I'm shipping up my class library now with Hello Jerry in there. And if I have this reliance, I can have those dependencies enumerated in there as well. And as well as just friendly stuff, you know, like copyright and information like that.
Yep.
All of it goes up. Doesn't have to go to nuget.org, right? It could go to my local NuGet in a file share or something else that my enterprise uses. And meanwhile, I get all this beauty from the UI built into Visual Studio, the extension that goes and looks, and if there is an update, pulls it down automatically and handles it for me. So there's a lot of, it's clean, and it's, I think a lot of developers don't realize just what a treat they have at their disposal.
Absolutely. Yep.
Cool. Well, Jeff, I think this is nice and approachable to developers. Hopefully, they will see and love this as much as, obviously, you do. Thanks for being on the show again.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jerry.